This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. Activists led rallies across the United States, including outside the Supreme Court here in Washington, to protest states adding new bans against women seeking abortions. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn has more on the story.
Groups like NARAL Pro-Choice are vowing to fight against laws that block women from getting access to abortions.
These anti-choice forces are coming for women, they're coming for doctors, and they're coming for Roe.
NARAL President Elise Hogue says new restrictions are designed to get the Supreme Court to ultimately overturn Roe versus Wade.
We stand together to call out politicians who talk so much about life, but don't seem to care about the lives of more than half of the population.
Vote them out.
While the activists are vowing to vote out lawmakers who work to restrict abortions this weekend, the vice president dug in.
Without apology for the sanctity of human life.
Jackie Quinn, Washington.
British Prime Minister Theresa May is offering lawmakers the chance to vote on a new referendum on the country's departure from the European Union, but only if they supported her proposed departure deal. May said Tuesday a bill she plans to present to Parliament next month will include a provision to vote on whether to hold a second referendum to leave the EU, a key demand of many opposition lawmakers.
This isn't just about me. If it was just about me and how I'd voted, we'd already have left the European Union. Actually, this is about a responsibility across the whole of the House of Commons for us to come together and find a way of delivering on the instruction people gave us.
An early agreement May reached with the EU has already been rejected by lawmakers three times. May plans to ask lawmakers to vote again during the week of June 3rd. As always, for more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. Thousands of protesters continued a sit-in and demonstrations outside the Sudanese Army General Command in Khartoum Tuesday, calling on the army generals for a quick transition of power to a civilian-led authority. Sudan's ruling generals and the protesters who drove President Omar al-Bashir from power last month said Tuesday they remain divided over who will lead the country during its transition period, despite progress in recent weeks. The protesters have insisted on limited military representation and a sovereign council, while the military wants to lead the body during an agreed-upon three-year transition. Protesters have threatened a general strike, accusing the generals of dragging their feet on handing over the power. Severe weather is creating dangerous conditions across parts of the United States. In the Midwestern state of Missouri, a tornado was blamed for damaging Lucas Oil Speedway, causing the track to postpone an event scheduled for this weekend. The AP's Ed Donnell has more on the storms.
Missouri Governor Mike Parson declared another state of emergency. A tornado hit a drive-through wild animal park and blew a tractor trailer off a nearby road. Flooding and high winds have hit Oklahoma, Kansas, and Arkansas. Parts of Missouri are still recovering from severe flooding in March along the Missouri River.
That was Ed Donahue reporting. The Organization of American States is urging Nicaraguan President Daniel Ortega to stick to his agreement to unconditionally free all political prisoners by the June 18th deadline. At a Washington meeting, the OAS resolution also demanded free, fair, and transparent elections in Nicaragua, along with freedom of expression and the right to peaceful protest. The opposition plans to pressure Ortega's government by holding a nationwide general strike on Thursday. An out-of-control wildfire burning in the Canadian province of Alberta has forced the evacuation of several thousand people in the town of High Level. Alberta Premier Jason Kenney said the dry conditions in northern Alberta are expected to continue for the foreseeable future, with the fire danger possibly increasing this week. There were no immediate reports of casualties from the wildfires that are burning there. A Nepali Sherpa has the distinction of climbing the world's tallest mountain twice in the same week. Kami Rita scaled Mount Everest, a record 24th time on Tuesday, 6 days after scaling the 8,850-meter peak for the 23rd time on May 15th. Rita has already set a high mark for the climbers of the future. Two other Sherpas have scaled Everest 21 times each, but they have both since retired. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 22nd. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Vote counting is underway in Malawi following Tuesday's presidential and parliamentary elections.
Voting was largely peaceful Tuesday with a few problems. Official results from the Tuesday's vote are expected on May 29.
That's reporter Lamek Masina in Kiolo, Malawi. Former Burkina Faso president is offering to negotiate a peace deal with armed groups. African military officials pledged their government support in preventing disease outbreaks in Africa. And more than 2 years following his death, the body of Etienne Tshisekedi will be returned to Kinshasa next week for burial.
He's going to be returned to DRC by May the 29th, and funeral will last for 3 days. Then he's going to be buried in Kinshasa compound.
Abraham Luakabuanga is the director of press for DRC President Felix Tshisekedi. Electronic trade helps Cameroon farmers and Kenyan women and the lupus disease. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Vote counting is underway in Malawi following Tuesday's presidential and parliamentary elections, seen as a tough test for President Peter Mutharika and his Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, following a campaign that focused on corruption and economic development. Polls closed at 6 p.m. local time on Tuesday after a day of long queues at many polling stations. Lamek Masina reports from Chiolo District, where incumbent President Mutharika voted.
Hundreds of people lined up to vote at Goliad polling station in southern Malawi Tuesday morning. It's President Peter Mutharika's home village, where he has many supporters. Alfred Lapkin is one of them. He says what has forced me to vote is the change which I have seen in the country. Also, I see that our current leader, Arthur Peter Mutharika, is governing the country so well. There is development all over the country, but not everyone in Chiolo District feels Malawi is headed in the right direction. Corruption and the economy are two major issues in this election. Voter Charles Majanga suggests changes are needed, but he declines to say whom he voted for. Majanga says he has great expectation that he has made the right choice, that he has chosen a person he think will help change his life. I have done this freely without anyone to force or intimidate me. Voting was largely peaceful Tuesday with a few problems. Joseph Timothy, the election monitor for the ruling DPP party, said he appreciated the turnout. Timothy says the turnout was good and is what he expected. One high-profile omission, however, has turned heads and sparked an investigation. Vice President Saulos Chilima's name was not found at the polling station where he went to vote. Instead, Chilima was registered at another station hundreds of kilometers away. Chilima is among the top three contenders for president, along with Mutharika and opposition leader Lazarus Chakwera. In the end, the vice president was allowed to vote by virtue of being one of the candidates. Mutharika won the 2014 election by about 450,000 votes, although he fell short of a majority. Official results from the Tuesday's vote are expected on May 29. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Chiolo, Malawi.
Former Burkina Faso President Blaise Compaoré has reportedly said he wants to come home to help broker a peace deal with armed groups. Compaoré has been living in exile in Ivory Coast for the last 5 years following his removal from office by a popular uprising. Burkina Faso, once a stable country, has been rocked recently by violent attacks from armed groups. It seems the government has been unable to stop religious-based attacks and intercommunal violence. Paul Sankara is the younger brother of the late Thomas Sankara, Burkina Faso's revolutionary president.
Any person who wants to propose a plan or bring his contribution in Burkina Faso doesn't necessarily need a protocol process to bring the contribution. Just do it, propose, and then there will be a yes or no from the government. Second, very important point, it's he has some issues with the justice cases in Burkina Faso in which he's a person that needs to come back in Burkina Faso and respond to the justice. So somehow it's a good news that he wants to come back first about the justice, and then he can anytime bring his contribution. But we want to know what kind of contribution or plan he has to help the country about the situation that we have right now in Burkina Faso.
Burkina Faso just recently has been going through a lot. The attacks, tourists, the attack on the church. So tell me, what do you think is going on? And doesn't the offer by the former president, wouldn't they make a difference?
Logical question is to know why from 2015, Burkina Faso became like Niger and Mali, one of the countries that is really targeted by the terrorists. Before 2015, it used to be a quiet country because the former regime of Blaise Compaoré used to give everything to the jihadists, including a back country using Burkina like a headquarters in order to attack many countries around Burkina Faso. So we don't need to go in this approach in order to have peace, because this is a kind of a deal or arrangement that can really cost pretty highly to the country.
Are you suggesting that either the former president or some people in his former government may have some connection with the jihadists?
Absolutely. I didn't do any investigation, but it's pretty simple. If you see that Burkina Faso never been attacked until 2015, so when the former government wasn't ruling the country, and then from the last presidential elections, it started a few months after 2015. The answer will be clear. Yes, they used to have a deal together, former regime and the terrorists. And some of them are out of the country, former government members, including one of the Mauritanian that is under international arrest. Name is Mustafa Shafi. So he used to be and is still in a link with the north of Burkina, the Tuaregs, and jihadist movement, etc., etc. So anything that the former government will use, including the cohesion of the different communities in the country, they will do it in order to give a hard time to the current government. That's why we experienced for the first time this assassination in a church by, I won't say Muslims, but terrorist jihadists.
Paul Sankara is the younger brother of the late Thomas Sankara, Burkina Faso's revolutionary president. He was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. The body of the late Democratic Republic of Congo veteran opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi will be brought back to the DRC on May 29th. He passed away in 2017 in Brussels at age 84. His son, Felix Tshisekedi, is now the new president of the DRC. Meanwhile, the new DRC government this week named a prime minister, Sylvester Ilunga Ilukama. Ibrahim Luakambuanga is the director of press for DRC President Felix Tshisekedi. He says the new prime minister is a career politician.
It's a well-known figure of politics in the DRC. He's been in President Mobutu's government, such as Laurent Désiré Kabila and also Joseph Kabila. His late position was the general manager of the railroad, National Railroad Company, and he's a university teacher. So we are glad that the president has made that choice and hoping that finally we're going to have the right person that's going to carry the vision of President Felix Tshisekedi.
I know that President Felix Tshisekedi is in some coalition. So does this appointment meet the approval of the Joseph Kabila portion of the coalition?
Yes, indeed, because the new prime minister is a member of the FCC. He's from President Kabila's side, and right after his nomination, they released a statement saying that they were happy of the confirmation of their choice, which is also the choice of President Tshisekedi. Also, the prime minister said that he's going to work thoroughly following, you know, the rules and to achieve President Felix Tshisekedi's vision. So I may say the first step is made. I'm just waiting for the government to be released and the work can start.
So, Abraham, we hear that the body of the late Etienne Tshisekedi is about to be returned to the DRC. What can you tell us?
Yes, if in truth, he knows that President Tshisekedi, the father, the late, is going to be returned to the DRC by May the 29th. And funeral will last for 3 days to the first. Then he's going to be buried in Kinshasa compound, which is near Nsele for those who've been into Kinshasa. That's where he's going to be buried on June the 1st. A lot of Congolese are actually mourning since when he passed away. It was in February 2017. It's been more than 2 years. We were waiting for him to be buried. And finally, by God's grace, he's going to be his son, who's actually the president, who's going to be buried his father. So it's going to be a lot of emotions. But we do thank God for the achievement of President Etienne Tshisekedi.
As you said, it's been more than 2 years since the death of Etienne Tshisekedi. At the time of his death, I thought there was a disagreement between the government, then led by President Joseph Kabila, in terms of where the late Tshisekedi should be buried. I guess now, with the new president being the son of the late Tshisekedi, that was not even a question now in terms of where the burial should take place.
As you said, there were some suspicious thought for the late government, thinking that maybe the return of his body will carry his orders, or maybe evolution to when, you know, what we've been told, you know, a year ago. But now, like I said, everything is back on track because of the son being in position of the president. And we have disagreement from both sides, President Kabila, the former president, and the new government, saying that, you know, we have to move ahead. And like I said, in less than 10 days, we are going to bury one of our great leaders in the DRC, President Etienne Tshisekedi.
Abraham, thank you very much.
You're more than welcome.
Abraham Luaka Buanga is the director of press for DRC President Felix Tshisekedi. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. Today is Wednesday, May 22nd, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 17 and a half minutes past the hour. A number of African military officials have pledged their government's support in planning, preventing, and protecting Africa from disease outbreaks. They announced their commitment at the 7th Africa Partner Outbreak Response Alliance, a joint military and civilian event. Yuji Uwimana reports from Rwanda's capital, Kigali.
These representatives from 25 African countries, in partnership with the United States Air Force Africa, believe the only way to win disease wars in Africa is joint military-civilian operations. Lieutenant Colonel Julius Naubeagai is the spokesperson of APORO, African Partner Outbreak Response Alliance.
We are gradually trying to put in place a manual that will help us to respond, to join efforts with the civilian partners in order to respond to epidemics. That is what we are moving through. That the public needs to support our efforts, and the military is coming only to reinforce the efforts that are already being done by the civilian partners within each African country.
In Africa, diseases like Ebola strike harder in places with insecurity. The spokesperson of the Rwanda Defense Force, Lieutenant Colonel Innocent Mnyengango, says that's where military interventions should emerge to secure healthcare operations. Like in sensible places like on the borders or in other high-targeted places, military and civilians have to work together. If you look, for example, in here in our country, we combine efforts with civilian sectors to contain outbreaks, which reduce consequences. You cannot say that people have security because there is no war when there are outbreaks. Dr. Diana Kashumba, the Rwanda's Minister of Health, says this cooperation has the sense of urgency because it's all about saving lives.
We are here to share ideas on how to avoid death.
When we say healthy population, it's not only limited to absence of illnesses. It touches on justice, on security, food security, and other sectors.
According to the World Health Organization, insecurity continues to hamper the response in the Democratic Republic of Congo. WHO says there have been 130 attacks on health facilities between January and mid-May, causing 4 deaths and injuring 38. That risks a further spread of the virus and a new spike in cases, as the number of reported deaths has reached over 1,000. Several health actors say effective military interventions can be the solution. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Information technologies are changing the lives of many Cameroonian farmers who previously were dependent on brokers who charged fees to serve as middlemen to purchasers. Now they can use the internet to find customers more easily and increase their income. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Douala in Cameroon.
Farmer Loic Ndomgwa sells almost all of his produce online and through phone apps. He's been using the internet for the last year and say it's improved his income. He says before now, they waited to produce before looking for buyers, but through the platform, they can work knowing that they have a precise customer who has already placed the order. Domgwa uses a local platform that links producers and buyers, allowing producers to sell directly to the customer without brokers who work as intermediaries. The app even makes it possible for the farmers to receive advanced payments. The application is called Jangolo Farmers. Designer Rose Ngamini says it helps farmers to sell before harvest. There is also a difference regarding the price when you buy a product on Jangolo Farmers, says Ngamini. Since the number of intermediaries is considerably reduced, the buyer gains by buying a product at a lower price, and the farmer has a higher profit margin by selling through our application, she says. Cameroon National Institute of Statistics reports that 25% of the population is connected daily to the internet and users are more often buying agri-food products online. Pierre Fredding Gudzi, Jangolo Farmer user, says he is one of those who is benefiting from the electronic trade.
Je suis en train de passer la commande des poulets en ligne. Tout simplement parce que j'ai pas assez de temps.
He says he makes orders to buy chickens online just because he does not have enough time as he works at a gym from morning till night. He says he chooses to place an order online so that it can be delivered at his job site. Cyprien Tanke, electronic trade specialist, says it's a good initiative to develop agri-food online sales platforms, but much remains to be done.
Alors, si vous ne possédez pas de magasin, il serait difficile pour l'acheteur d'évaluer votre produit.
He says if a company does not own stores, it would be difficult for buyers to evaluate the product they are buying. The African Development Bank estimates there are more than 1 billion mobile phone subscribers in Africa, making the market bigger than either the European Union or the United States. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News.
97% of lupus patients in Kenya are women. According to Dr. Philip Simani, a rheumatologist, lupus mostly affects reproductive age women between the age of 15 and 45. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the month of May is Lupus Awareness Month.
Lupus is a long-term autoimmune disease in which the body's immune system becomes hyperactive and attacks normal healthy tissues. Winnie Achieng, a mother and a wife, had to take a break from work for a whole year to seek medication. She narrates her encounter that at some point she had to seek traditional medication since the doctors took too long to diagnose what was ailing her.
I remember my mother-in-law had to push so that I can go home because they knew I've been bewitched. I have taken traditional, the herbs. I have been prayed for by these people who pray and remove the demons in you. My friends have said I have HIV.
Acheng says the condition had put her marriage at stake since there was financial constraints and the husband could not understand her condition.
It reduces your libido. your sex drive goes down. Plus, your partner will be uncomfortable because you see you're in pain. You need someone who understands.
Another patient, Beatrice Gitao, lost her job because her delivery at workplace was below average and the company could not put up with her condition.
Due to lupus, I lost my job. I was a laboratory technician where I could not withstand some fumes of the chemicals. My duties were to be reduced, but unfortunately, my boss didn't agree on that. They took me to another department where there was no chemicals, but still the principal insisted that I had to do my career job. That didn't agree well with me, and that's why I had to resign.
Caroline Mwangi, a 20-year-old university student, faced stigma and even dropped out of high school to seek treatment, which took long before she finished her high school education.
I was admitted for 6 months, so I had to stop school. Then after the admission, I got paralyzed. I recovered early 2017. Then I went back to high school. Now I finished last year, 2018. So I go for clinics every month and I take drugs every day.
Lupus is not a contagious disease. A person cannot transmit it sexually or in any other way to another person. However, in rare cases, women with lupus may give birth to children who develop a form of lupus called neonatal lupus. Dr. Philip Simani says the research they have carried out individually has not really found out the main cause of lupus.
There is a tendency, the disease tends to cluster in families, so we don't know how it's passed on. I think what we are trying to do right now is to create awareness.
Lupus has no cure. It can only be managed through attending clinics and taking daily medication. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Vote counting is underway in Malawi following Tuesday's presidential and parliamentary elections, seen as a tough test for President Peter Mutharika and his Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, following a campaign that focused on corruption and economic development. Polls closed at 6 p.m. local time on Tuesday after a day of long queues at many polling stations. A former colonel who served decades ago in the Somali National Army was convicted Tuesday in a U.S. court of being responsible for the torture of a teenager in 1987. Yusuf Abdi Ali, who now lives in Alexandria, Virginia, served under dictator Sia Barre. A civil jury in the Northern Virginia suburb of Washington, D.C., found him responsible for the torture of Farhan Mahamud Tani Wafa and ordered him to pay $500,000. The verdict was reached after more than 3 days of deliberations in a lawsuit that was filed 15 years ago by the San Francisco-based Center for Justice and Accountability on behalf of Wafa, who lives in a village in northwest Somalia. Former Burkina Faso President Blaise Compaoré has reportedly said he wants to come home to help broker a peace deal with armed groups. Compaoré has been living in exile in Ivory Coast for the last 5 years following his removal from office by a popular uprising. Burkina Faso, once a stable country, has been rocked recently by violent attacks from armed groups. It seems the government has been unable to stop religious-based attacks and intercommunal violence. And that's it for this Wednesday, May 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer David Vandy and reporters Peter Clotin and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, sports fans. This is the voice of America's Sonny Young. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC for the Sunny Side of Sports. On Fridays, you can also hear my expanded 30-minute edition of the show at 17:30 UTC, right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America.
Tune in to VOA programs on your radio and on the internet. We bring you news about
about Africa and the world 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. News, talk shows, sports, music, everything you want to hear. Available on the radio and the web on The Voice of America. Find the VOA program guide at www.voanews.com and check local listings for stations near you that carry VOA programming.